the opportunity to look see. I get more information by looking at the 11 meters. When I came on this morning, there was so little activity going on 10 meters. I was concerned that my antenna might be screwy, so I tuned up 11 meters. Where, you know, it's kind of a given that there's going to be some knuckleheads yelling. And sure enough, enormous signal, so I at least knew that my antenna was still up there. It hadn't gotten knocked down overnight. So, it was quiet. I haven't really bothered to look at 6 meters because I don't think I've ever seen it active. I probably should wait for some contest and then go over to 6 meters and look, see if there's activity. Because if there's ever going to be activity, it's going to be in a contest. You know, when the ARR at their DX International, 10 meters was a zoo.
Yeah, I'd have two choices, I guess, on 6 meters for activity. It's either wait for the contest or get on FT8 or I think the QO something or other, specialized 6 meter mode. And of course there's some of the moon bounce modes, but in terms of terrestrial modes, I think there are two popular digital modes on 6 meters. But in terms of serious weak signal work now, I think a lot of it is FT8. I worked some DX on sideband, I worked Bermuda, that's hardly DX on sideband on 6 meters. I've worked a couple of Europeans on CW, and I have 10 countries confirmed, including one on CW. Most of those are FT8. Go ahead.
AC2GS. Well, people call 6 meters, or at least I used to call 6 meters the magic band. I don't see any magic myself personally.
Yeah, well, it depends on the kind of operating you do. Buddy of mine on the West Coast is in fact looking for, and I wonder if you have any thoughts. I know you use the high-end Flex radio, and the remote site I usually use is also using a Flex radio, but I don't think he wants to spend that kind of money. He wants to upgrade his entry-level Kenwood radio. I think he has a 450 or something like that. He also has my old ICOM 703. Anyway, he wants something with a really good receiver. He's in an urban area. He's using an 8-foot whip, but works miracles with the thing. From Concord, California, he's worked it to Europe on 40-meter sideband. He does sideband only, and he has 90 countries confirmed overall, mostly during the sunspot minimum. He got his license and got on toward the tail end of the last cycle. Anyway, so he asked me, well, what would be a good radio? I actually suggest that he look at the Elecraft radios, because I think he's one of these guys who could build a radio from a kit if he wants to. I don't know if he wants to do that, but he wants something relatively, he wants an affordable, higher-end radio with a really good receiver. I've used those a couple of times, both remotely and at field day and at picnics. I think those are quite good. Any thoughts on that subject, Roy?
Is he looking for a portable? I'm not quite sure which Elecraft you're suggesting. They have two portable versions, and then they have a desktop.
He operates from his garden apartment near San Francisco. I've been urging him to go portable or mobile, but so far he wants to seems to want to limit his ham radio to the apartment. It is a small apartment, so he wants something with a probably wants something with a small footprint. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Ordinarily, if he didn't mind something a little bit bigger, it's kind of in the middle. The ICOM 7300 seems to be the radio for this decade. I find that every decade there's one radio that about half of the people I talk to are operating. And this particular decade, it seems to be the 7300. It's a good performer, I'm told, and it has an excellent price point. It's certainly not a deluxe, overpriced model.
Okay, that's the way I used to shop for radios. I remember when I was a kid, it seemed, when I tuned around the bands, as a child, almost everybody seemed to be using a Drake TR-4, so I convinced my dad to buy one of those, and it worked reasonably well. It was a relatively poor performer on sideband. I later learned, actually years later, that the way to operate it was not to follow the instructions and run with the mic gain way out, and I would have gotten much better performance. But in the 70s, in the 60s and 70s, that was the radio. And then I bought a Kenwood 820 in the 80s, and that performed reasonably well for a number of years, and finally got the ICOM 765, which only recently died a month or two after I sold it to a guy at the local club. He's been trying to get it fixed because he actually loves the radio. But I was really disappointed that the radio cost out a month or two after I sold it to him. But he said it's a fantastic CW radio. But anyway, yeah, I'll pass that along because I haven't had a chance to really listen around HF and see what the guys are using. Thanks for it.
You're welcome. Last decade, it seemed to be the Kenwood TS-2000.
Yeah, I think I remember that one. That was like a DC to daylight radio that could operate from like 160 up to 1.2 gigs with a couple of attachments if you wanted to. Is that the radio you're talking about?
Yeah, I knew a guy in Staten Island. He had five of them when he passed away. I think one was broken. But, yeah, they come in different versions. I think you had to actually buy the 1.2 gigahertz. You couldn't kind of fix it yourself. They had front-end attachments. They had all kinds of things. It was incredibly popular when I was getting into the hobby 12 years ago.
I think I used one of those at Field Day. The Elecraft radios, I think I used the K2 with some club picnics in at Field Day. The Moham radio, I used K3s for a while, and those seemed to perform really well and were really easy to use. I used to talk every week as a kid to the guy who ultimately designed, to Wayne Burdick, who ultimately designed the Elecraft radios. I've used them, and I know that Dick loved them. His 10X group used K2s as tunable front ends for their microwave work. Go ahead.
Yeah, Elecraft has a very good reputation. It's an American product, and the engineer is very clever. It's not a cheap radio, though. I mean, if you're looking for a kind of medium price or a lower price, Elecraft is probably not the place to go. But for it's a high quality piece of equipment.
Yeah, without having looked it up, I sort of remembered that. But they're a little cheaper than they would be otherwise. Buy them as a kid, if I remember correctly, and and assemble it yourself. It seems like a kind of challenging thing to do, but I know my buddy is quite capable of doing it. He's an extremely capable guy. I think I've heard that. I'll suggest the ICOM 73 to look at the ICOM 7300. See what he thinks of that one. I'm amazed at what he accomplishes. He's in an apartment. He's not allowed to leave an antenna on the balcony, so he has to put his 8-foot whip out on the balcony every time he wants to get on the air for a couple of hours. Retune his counterpoise, reset his, his coils, And he gets the SWR to 1-to-1 every time, apparently, and just works incredible DX. I mean, I cannot believe the guy managed to work Europe from the West Coast on 40-meter foam. That's kind of amazing with an 8-foot width on sideband. Go ahead.
AC2GS. Where there's a will, there's a way. The most important ingredient, most people would say, is I know some guy who said the antenna is 83.4% of your shack, which I regularly laughed in his face when he gave me a specific, you know, number down to a tenth. But I think your stubbornness is probably the most important component, because if you're stubborn enough, you'll figure out the rest. And as far as Elecraft, I think when they use the term kits, most of us think of Heathkit. It's decidedly not the 20th century version of a kit. It's more the late 21st century version of a kit, where it's just maybe about 5 or 6 modules that just have to be plugged into each other. As far as I recall it, I might be wrong, but I think that that's what it is. I've had things like that where, you know, I was able to save 10% of the price of a product by assembling the modules. And in those cases, I'm not saying it's this radio. It took me an entire 10 minutes to accomplish, and I saved something like $40. So kits are kind of designed for the 21st century and kids with a low attention span, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. I did not know it was really just plug in a couple of modules. Or, you know, that's definitely something Steve could do without any real problem. But anyway, that's interesting. Anyway, okay. I think it's getting kind of late. I'll let you go. I'm actually going to the band in terms of working. DX is a nice time to do it after most of the guys with real jobs have gone to sleep now, and sometimes work some cool stuff with nobody else calling. Certainly, Roy, WB2DX. So thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Frank. It's always a pleasure. Stay safe. Be well. 73.
Night.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
L repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
This is WI2M listening.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
WI2M listening.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
WB2ZSC. WB2ZSC. WB2IKT. Morning, Peter.
Get that last bit of information I sent you.
Yeah, affirmative. No, I got it. It's interesting. It's interesting that I would have thought that the FCC's information would have been more specific. I was pretty much just surprised to see that they used a kind of like a generic number for the antenna instead of the specific model that was on hand.
No, I thought the model was on there, which is where I got it from. And it's just apparently that I went onto the company's website, and you got to look up how many bays it is.
Right, right. And then there was a whole thing about, is it full wave spaced? Is it half wave spaced? Wasn't it all specific about that? So I'm going to assume it was halfway spaced and four bays. Let's see. Four bays, they have, you know, just under 500 watts. So something tells me that the actual transmitter is probably a 250-watt machine because that antenna is going to have about 3 dB gain or so, less some feedback cluster stuff. So I kind of suspect it's actually a 250-watt transmitter.
Oh, okay. I left my... thought I hung up the phone. Steve's going to hear a lot of garbage in the background. Anyway, I just took a superficial look at that just to get an idea of height. And they say it's 55 meters to the... I think the center point on the antenna... which I guess is the high current point.
Yeah, the radiation center is almost always the center point between, you know, the of the antenna itself. So if there are four bays, it's the midpoint in between bays two and three. And, you know, the antenna is 11 meters long, the center point would be at 5.5 meters.
Right, which is sort of what I thought. Of course, I don't know how much of a mast they have on there.
Yeah, and there was a whole bunch of other details about radomes and de-icers and such, all of which changed the model number. So it's all, you know, the 6812, and as you found out. But so that's why I was asking exactly which one, and I was a wee bit surprised to see it not there. The other question that I would have is, you know, how is that thing actually mounted? And I know I can see it from the street when I look up at the building, but it's pretty hard to see. They don't want to make a show out of it. They would prefer to conceal what the heck is on the roof there.
I don't think that would... I don't know. I think people make more out of what other people think than actually is there. They select a small group of few crazy people who think it's an issue.
Yep, I agree with you there. I recall the few years ago there was a big controversy in Bayville about putting a cell tower or cell antennas on a water tower. And the people there rallied against it. They made this huge stink about it, mostly because the water tower apparently was across a field from an elementary school. They were convinced that that would be, that the cell devices would cause harm to the elementary school. So, you know, just, how can I say, you know, runaway fear is what I would think I'd call it.
Yes, I am intimately familiar with it. And it's diagonally, sort of, diagonally across the street from the school, probably in 200-300 yards. So, you know, people who don't understand what's going on immediately jump to wrong conclusions.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that, you know, is that cell site more than just, 10 watts or so? And if it is, I'd really be surprised.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it is. You've got to remember, first of all, there's now three carriers over there. The antennas are sectorized, and each sector may be 10 watts. I don't know, but the total RF output, I can't tell you what it is. I'm not familiar with that particular business.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what it is either. I guess we'd have to hear from the specific carriers, but I'm just thinking is that the whole point was ridiculous. Because, as I recall, you know, after they kind of shot down the, you know, the idea of putting the antennas there, they all wondered why their cell phone batteries weren't lasting so long. Failed to understand that the further away the tower is from their phone, the phone has sort of like a leveling loop in it, and it's going to make more power, which of course is going to drain the battery, and it's actually going to result in worse RF exposure for somebody actually using their phone, simply because when you're using your phone, it's literally right next to your head. And the lack of understanding of that, to me, is stunning.
So it's just a common, that's a common sense thing. If you explain to them that the antennas are 110 feet vertical and 200 feet horizontal, and the amount of RF drops proportionately as the inverse of the distance squared, which I believe is how it's explained, I can understand them not understanding that.
Right. Lack of understanding of how cell phones and RF works is not stunning, because most people have absolutely no clue about anything when it comes to RF and WJ2P mobile.
But when you talk to them about the phone that they're actually using and the fact that they're holding it next to their head, that's where the exposure comes from. So if the cell tower is near, your phone will be at a lower power level and there'll be less exposure. That, it seems to go over their head, part of the body.
Try to explain that to a person that's getting a cell repeater put in front of their house and see how much luck you have, WJ2B.
Yeah, I don't think we'll have much luck explaining that to anybody, but you're right. Thanks for the comment.
Well, there are ways to explain to the people, such as measuring signal strength from say 300 yards away at 100 watts, or like 2 inches away at like a quarter of a watt.
Yeah, you can actually calculate that out. I think you're plus 20 dB or plus 23 dBm out of your phone, literally at the adjacent to your head, is probably going to be stronger. In fact, I'm almost certain that it is going to register to be stronger. than it is at, you know, 100 yards away from the device, from the tower or the antenna. It's J2B. Thanks for the comment. Over to you, and then back to Steve.
To be J2B Mobile. I've been listening for a little while, and when he the other station, ZSC, when he said that it was, I think he used the word stunning, that a person can't understand that. He has to realize that your typical person, I mean, we're hams, we know a little bit about RF, some of us are electrical engineers, know a lot about RF, and your typical person that you're going to walk up to up the street has absolutely no comprehension or understanding of anything RF, cell phones, power output, RF exposure. You try to explain it to them, they're going to look at you like you have three heads. J2B.
Actually, that was the point I was making. Most people wouldn't understand it, although, you know, transmit an XDA, transmit 300 yards away, which is going to be worse. You know. oh, well.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, I got a form from Richie this morning, which I'm looking at. And they're asking an awful lot of questions about the device that we're surveying the site for on that day. Wondering if you have some room for a phone call so we can discuss.
Yeah, I'm just going to make a stop over in Westbury in a few minutes. I think I have your number. How about if I call you when I'm ready? I also have to make some phone calls from there, and I'll have a computer in front of me that I can look things up on.
Yeah, okay, that'll work. And, okay, yeah, I guess I got to get dressed pretty quick because I'm not, I'm sitting here in my PJs in the shack. So, time to get dressed to await your phone call.
Whatever makes you happy. Okay, anyway, I am about three or 4 minutes out from my stop, so you go take care of what you got to take care of. It's probably going to be at least 10 minutes for me, if not one.
Okay. That'll work. Anyway, we'll talk to you later. Let me run off and rest. Let me say 73 and 73 to WJ2B as well. WB2IJT will be clear. Back in 10 minutes or so, maybe 15.
Guys, have yourself a fine rest of your day. I assume you're both working the mobile cell phone or cell phone industry there. Go ahead. WJ2B. Have yourselves a good day, guys. WJ2B clear.
Okay, 73. And by the way, I'm a retired engineer. I've had extensive experience in the broadcast industry, but most of my working career was actually working for Grumman and then subsequently Northrop Grumman. So, yeah. And I spent 5 years of my life working in an RF lab, so there you go. But I have no experience working in the cell phone industry. Just stuff I know about RF.
No problem. Yeah, I thought you guys were talking about cell phones. I wasn't sure, but yeah, my dad, I never worked for Grumman, but my dad retired from there in 1982. He worked there for 20 years in Plant 12 on South Oyster Bay Road in the measurement standards area there. So I visited Grumman quite a few times. Never worked there, though. 73, guys. WJ2B.
Okay. Take care. And I'm not in the cell phone industry either. I'm in the related two-way communications industry. WB2ZSC.
Copy that, ZSC. Have yourselves a good day. WJ2B clear. Thank you.
Park InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
K2KOQ.
AA2GC.
W2VL repeater.
K2KNB. Richie, how are you today? I hope you're enjoying the day. AA2GC.
Yep, still a little too cold. I'd love to be outside in a little more, but, well, I think it's supposed to get a little bit warmer, but I don't take well to the cold weather.
Yeah, it's beautiful out. It's pretty brisk, though, 41, at least in the car thermometer. Running errands, Monday's my day off. Actually, I'm doing research to see if I can finally, I haven't used an HF radio in like 30 years. So I'm trying to figure out how to set up a room, where to put stuff, what kind of antenna. Actually, I bought years ago an N-Fed wire antenna that I'm going to figure out how to put on the roof. You have to have a lot of motivation for HF as compared to UHF, VHF.
Well, like everything else, it depends on the time of day and what you feel like doing. Like you're in the car, it's just convenient to talk locally, and that's where you establish good friendships and get a lot of good advice in terms of how to set up your station, what to use. We used to have a guy that, Alan, K2ACB, I think it was, and he had a law office in the city, and he lived up in not Scarsdale, just south of that, I forget, New Rochelle maybe. And, he would have some great HF contacts in the car going along the West Side Highway, sometimes picking up stations more easily than I did from the station. So, that was a lot of fun and making those contacts, but it's a good balance of two. You know, where else could you meet nice people except on a repeater?
That is certainly true. I'm just figuring out where to put an HF station in my house. All right, I am at my first stop, so I'll probably be in and out all day. I hope you're enjoying whatever you are doing, Richie. This is AA2GC. I'll be back in a little while.
All right, Ted. Yes, my lifetime ambition is to be in my basement. It's never going to happen, but I keep working on it. Have a good one. Maybe we'll catch you later. AA2GC, K2K Andy.
NZ2K Mobile. Good morning.
K2KNB.
KD2GMB from NZ2K. Good morning. Name is Paul. Located near Closter, New Jersey. How copy?
No, copying fine, Paul. Hello, here is Richie. I'm located in Old Beth Page. That's a tongue twister you call there, NZ2K. And where are you located, Paul?
Yeah, Roger, mobile out here near Closter, New Jersey. Not too far from Alpine, not too far from the Palisades Interstate Parkway, and just trying to wind my way around some obscure place I got to get to. Nice to meet you, Richie. Good audio. Sounds like you're on a space station there anyway. And hope that you guys didn't get too much rain. I think Long Island and some other places out there got hit pretty hard. We had about 2 3/4 inches of rain on Saturday there. Not much in the way of the wind department, but a lot of rain, over.
Yeah, I've had a problem with small leaks in the basement, and it's usually when you have the heavy rain and the water just really settles down low on the foundation. So I had three small leaks to contend with. I got some hydraulic cement in there. Hopefully got that. Yeah, it's pretty heavy, and my street tends to flood. Usually, in heavy rains, it could cover actually the whole street. Sometimes maybe half of it. But hopefully we won't have anything like that. Although I think they say Thursday we may have another bad day. Yeah, I think where you're located, you may be in and out of the repeater because of the hills in the area. I don't know what road you're on. Are you on the Palisades or somewhere up around there?
About a couple of miles. I'm in Closter, which isn't too far from Pearl River, New York. But you're right. I've got a lot of hills stuff in the way. Trying to get to a place where I got to be. I got to jump here for a little bit. I got to go check on the on a stone. Stone here anyway. I better do something with my parking here, so let me get back to you, Richie, NZPK Mobile.
There. All right, Paul. Yeah, I copied 100%, but it was a little difficult because it breaks me up. So, all right, have a great day. Catch you again, K2KNB.
Yeah, let me see how much power.
Yeah, you're pretty much out of it now, Paul.
Anybody around?
Yeah, K2KMB again, Paul.
Yeah, looks like the grave mark is done perfect. Went here last week to get it back to my parents, and they didn't do it right, but now they did. Got everything right on the money, and I'm very happy. So, anyway, yeah, I'm in and out of a lot of crazy hills and stuff like that anyway, and I don't know if there's any remote receivers, but I'm just running about 40 watts on an 857. Anyway, back to you, Richard. I didn't realize there was anybody out here these days. I was about ready to be honest with you, yank the stuff out of my vehicle here, you know, the radio and stuff. There just doesn't much activity anymore, over.
A lot of things have changed, some of it pre-COVID, some of it as a result of COVID. We're talking about that a few times. You don't have the same drive time that you used to be able to check in. You don't have afternoon drive time. A lot of retired people who might have been monitoring, you know, many of them have moved to Florida. Some of them have become silent keys. This is still pretty active. There's still a lot of people that listen. Just sometimes they can't for one reason come back to someone, but I try wherever possible. If I hear someone's call sign out there, you know, more than one, nobody came back to them, I do try to get back to them. But it's changed. But as I said, this is still one of the more active repeaters.
Yeah, very good. Well, I don't have a big footprint right now. But anyway, you know, it seems to work out pretty good. I get pretty good range with it. I got an 857. I just recently put a new microphone on this radio here. And hoping that it's doing its job anyway. I think it is, anyhow. Let's get an element on here. Boy, this road is bumpier than heck, and I got a pickup truck there. Anyway. You're right. There's something about it. I have to tell you that I'm one of those guys that just retired from work. Wondering why all the time, you know. I decided to retire, but it was time. 65, and time to go anyway. Collect my thoughts and get out the door, so to say. Anyway, that's the story. But yeah, there are people out there in places. I just don't hear too many people anymore. The repeaters around here that I use.
Well, it's interesting. I think there's a lot of ham radio operators I think it's more than 700,000 throughout the nation, certainly a lot in a metropolitan area like this. But don't know what they're doing. You know, some may be UHF. Some people have found DMR to be pretty popular. D-Star, you know, so they're spread out as opposed to years ago when it was pretty much analog with juice and that was it. So I think that's what Limark experiences. We have 8 repeaters. We run 2 meter, 440, 1.2 gig, 220, DMR fusion. You know, so at any given time, people could be on some of those other repeaters and taking away from W2VL, which was always the main. So there's a lot of different things. But as I said, most of the times you'll find someone up on its frequency listening and coming back to you just as I did. It's K2KND.
What you guys have there on but more stuff, but I never hear anybody in their voice.
Copy was very poor. Maybe I had 25% copy. So again, I don't know if you're behind hills at this point, but copy was very difficult, Paul.
Okay. Well, maybe I better say 73. I don't know. I think I got the right tone. You guys don't have any remote receivers on this, do you?
Not up by you. Ironically, we are up on Empire, on the Empire State Building. But I think that the coverage, because of the direction of Manhattan, which is actually not north-south, but northeast-southwest, I think you're not in that coverage range.
Yeah, I kind of remember that it used to be, the footprint used to be a little different, and I hear somebody talking about that. All right, well, let me not belabor your ears. I'll catch you later. Thanks for all the good words. I know you're trying your best to chat with me. I appreciate it. I'll just sit back and relax for a little bit and just drive here back towards where I got to go. Good to talk to you, Rich, from November. Who was on the mobile? 73. I'll catch you around.
Hi, 734. Have a good day. K2KNB.
Mobile.
I'm sorry, was there another station in there?
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
WJ2B mobile.
At W station, you're a little noisy. AA2GC. Good morning. The name here is Ted Tango Echo Delta.
How you doing, Ted? This is Joe Juliet Oscar Echo, call sign is WJ2B, right here in Smithtown, going through the 375 repeater there. Go ahead.
How are you today, Joe? I am running errands in Long Beach / Island Park, doing stuff on my day off to get stuff done, and I hope you're enjoying the weather. It's a beautiful day, a little cold, but I could live with it. It's nice. Are you working or retired?
I'm a mostly retired electrical engineer. I do some consulting work on the side every so often, but mostly in broadcast engineering. But yeah, I know where you are, Island Park, Long Beach area. My parents had a boat in that canal there where the Wetsons used to be. I don't know if you remember that in the 1970s and 80s, that long canal that goes into Reynolds Channel. And right off of the main drag that goes over the Long Beach Bridge. So know the area well. Know exactly where you are. I'm out here in Smithtown right now by 347 and Route 111, if you know where that is. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do, Joe. I know exactly where that is. yeah, we live in the Long Beach area. I don't remember the Wetsons. I mean, we've only lived here for about, I guess, 15 years almost at this point. When I was very young, when I was a young child, my aunt lived in Long Beach. And we used to visit her once a year. She had a place in the summer. Had no idea I would eventually live here. I don't remember a Wetsons, though, Joe.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, I was probably back in the 70s, early 80s, and then it closed up. But, yeah, it's right off the that canal on the left there, right off the main road that goes over the Long Beach Bridge where they used to have the boat. They used to have an old guy with a waterfront house there on the canal that used to rent the slips. He had five or six slips in front of his house, and they used to keep the boat over there. But that was many, many moons ago. I had my own boat back in the mid-1980s to early 90s. I sold it, and I had it in Bay Park Marina right by the entrance to Bay Park, if you know where it is, by the sewage treatment plant there.
Yeah, I do. we never owned a boat. I did come close. We went to a boat show once, and I had a pen in my hand, and the contract was on the table. And as I was moving my pen towards the contract, my wife was pulling my arm away. We never got the boat, and we went on other people's boats.
Well, I don't know if you ever heard the saying about boats, is that the happiest day in a boat owner's life is the day he buys it and the day he sells it. Go ahead.
Yep, I've heard that more than once. And the trouble for someone like you have to commit to it. You know, here the weather is good for only several months, and if you work, you're limited to weekends, and then half the weekends you have commitments that keep you from the boat, and the other half of the weekends the weather is not good. So we never really committed to it, because you really have to commit to it. But we had friends that had boats, so it worked out.
Yeah, my parents actually boat before I was born, around 1960 in a boat show. And they really enjoyed fishing. They were out every weekend catching fish, and then mostly fluke and flounder, and you know, then cleaning it and putting it in the freezer and eating it fresh. And they really loved fishing. So they really enjoyed their boat. I mean, I used it mostly for just cruising around. They did some fishing, but I was never a big fan of fishing. It was it seemed like kind of a lot of work for little reward. You know, you could go to a fish store and buy some fish if you want to fish. So. But my parents really enjoyed their boat. I sort of enjoyed it at first, and then I got kind of tired of it, and then I was getting married and sold it for the, you know, have extra money for the, buying a house out here. So, but yeah, some people really enjoy it. It depends on the person. You know, you have to be a boating, you have to love boating. You either love it or you hate it, pretty much.
It certainly requires a commitment. We had, excuse me, we had friends that had, he had a Sea Ray, and he wanted that boat perfectly clean, which seemed to me to be the opposite of what happens when a boat is in the water. And, you know, he would make you take your shoes off when you got in the boat. The boat was always perfectly spick and span. Very meticulous person, and but it was so much work. I was glad I visited, and I was glad when I left.
That's flight, I enjoyed my going on my parents' boat more because my father always did all the work. So he used to do the bait and clean the fish and clean the boat, and I would just go along for the ride. Like you said, that's a lot nicer than having your own boat and having to worry about it and worrying about maintenance and winter dockage. And you can't, like you said, you leave it in the water around that area, barnacles grow on the bottom, and you got to worry about that. So, yeah, it's a big responsibility, a big commitment, like you said. So, like I said, you really have to love it. If you don't really love it, then with all the work that you have to do, you wind up hating it, and then you come to that happy day when you sell it.
Yep, that is certainly true. My first stop to go some shopping, and I will be in and out. Thanks for keeping me company, Joe. We'll be in and out all day. This is AA2GC.
AA2GC, nice speaking with you. Have yourself a great rest of your day. Beautiful weather today, and have fun with your shopping. 73 is WJ2B.
JC2BZB. Bill
Joe, KC2BZB. Hey, Mr. Joe BZB, how's the retirement going?
It's going great. Now, there was a couple of weeks of getting insurance and other financial matters straightened out. And the inevitable working on the shack area down here, which, you know, 20 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag, so that's always going to be an issue. Outside of that, it's been great. Very happy I took the package.
Copy that. Happy for you, and hopefully you will enjoy yourself and not want to go back to work. But yeah, it depends on the person. I mean, some people like retirement, and some people don't. So it depends on the person. I mean, people that are complete workaholics can never retire. They're going to be working till they're 80, you know?
That's not me. I'm very happy not to work. And, you know, I thought I'd miss it to some extent, and the answer is no.
Copy that. Yeah, I kind of, actually, what you could look into if you really don't want to give up working completely is look into getting some consulting work. I don't know, you know, what connections you have in the industry, but consulting can keep you busy on your time. Like, you don't have to, you know, punch a clock and have to be somewhere for it. You can do it whenever you feel like, and as long as you have an agreement with your client when they need the work by, when they need you there or whatever, it's not such a big commitment like a 9-to-5.
KC2BZB. You know, I thought I'd be interested in it, and I'm actually not. I thought my company was going to offer it to me, but probably, you know, part of the deal was if you're taking a package, we're not going to all, you know, turn around and pay you as a consultant. You know what, though? I'm not disappointed. I really don't miss work. I don't know any other way to put it. I thought, like you, I would look for consulting work or be open to it, but listen, if somebody comes down and they offer me some good money, I'm not going to say I'll turn it down, but I'm not looking for it.
Well, to tell you the truth, I've done so many different things in electronics that the consulting work that I did for, like, the last, I guess about the last 5 or 6 years was mainly based on my friend owning a radio station. And it pretty much led, you know, the contacts that he had in the industry and other equipment vendors that stuff he bought from that they didn't want to ship it overseas, so they sent it to me to fix it, you know, that kind of stuff. So I kind of like